Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing up this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Casa 1910. If you've been curious, perhaps even tempted, to try a Mexican puro, this is the stick to get. An absolute pleasure to smoke, and honestly, one of my all-time top tens, the Casa 1910. Get yours today, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
We need objective information to process because we're thinking adults and it's a free society, and obviously future health crises will occur, and many things will be told to us by our elected government, by people in the media. We need to be able to filter out truth from non-truth.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Dr. Scott Atlas, Robert Wesson, Senior Fellow in Healthcare Policy at the Hoover Institution, a fellow at Hillsdale's Academy for Science and Freedom, and co-director at the Global Liberty Initiative. We'll talk in depth about his recommendations for ways to restore trust in public health officials. Dr. Atlas, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
You wrote a piece at Real Clear Politics, today's public health emergency, restoring trust with 7 steps. In it, you say faith in health agencies has plummeted more rapidly since 2019 than any other government institution. What's the consequences of that? Why should we be so concerned?
Well, because of the really mismanagement, the lack of information transparency, and mandated behaviors against common sense and against all basic scientific evidence, the public has lost faith not only in our government institutions like the FDA and the CDC, as I mentioned in the piece, with almost 2/3 now rating their performance as only fair or poor, but half of America expresses little confidence in science itself. This is important because as an objective society, we need to trust the so-called objective people, mm-hmm. and that has generally been the credible expert class. In this sort of area, science and medical science, public health guidance, people don't have time, regular people, to go through the data. It's not that it's that complicated, but we do rely and respect the so-called authoritative figures because we're busy working, we're busy trying to make decisions for our families, and we need objective information to process because we're thinking adults and it's a free society, and obviously future health crises will occur, and many things will be told to us by our elected government, by people in the media. We need to be able to filter out truth from non-truth.
Thankfully, you are here with 7 recommendations on initial executive orders for someone, a president, who might want to restore trust in public health. And we'll see how many we can talk about in our time together today. The very first one is to clearly define by law a public health emergency with strict time limits that would require legislation to extend. You have an example here, perhaps 2 weeks. What do you think is an appropriate length? Why is it perhaps 2 weeks for emergency powers to be able to be used?
Well, what we saw during the pandemic is the declaration of a health emergency that therefore allowed everything, including our basic constitutional freedoms, to be overridden. We frankly had human rights violations where our guarantees were reversed and without any limit. I think most people, when we heard this phrase, 2 weeks to slow the spread, I think people were on board with temporary things. But ultimately, that was never ended. And that allows, as we saw, unlimited overriding of individual rights beyond even our system of laws. And frankly, this is very destructive, not only because of the lack of time limit, because of the lack of a definition of what a public health emergency is. Mm-hmm. This term could be used and implemented in many things, including, for instance, climate change, just as one example.
Right.
But we could invoke that as leaders. Leaders could invoke that declaration of a health emergency to facilitate any kind of maneuver.
You recommend adding term limits to all health agency positions after first cleaning house of all heads of CDC, NIH, FDA. We talk often about term limits for legislators, whether it be in individual states or in Congress, too. Is the rationale behind it the same for why term limits might be useful for health agency positions?
I think the rationale is similar, but I think this is an unspoken area. I think regular people, including myself, are not aware of the power of bureaucrats who are entrenched. I saw when I went into the White House and into Washington that the people working in the agencies were there for their entire careers. They outlasted elected administrations. In fact, in many ways, they have more power than the elected officials. The people, like, just was one flagrant example. Anthony Fauci was a bureaucrat for 38 years. We had people, Birx was a bureaucrat for decades. We have people in the CDC, the NIH, the FDA, and most agencies that spend their careers there. They accrue power. They cover for each other. And they set up unhealthy relationships with outside parties, including the media. And they know. The truth is, they know they outlast a president or a presidential administration or an appointed head of their agency. So we need to limit that. We need to get rid of the people who are entrenched. We need to have a far more accountability in these people. You know, it's an unhealthy situation when people are there because they develop these perverse incentives like their own careers instead of the common good for the people.
Talking with Dr. Scott Atlas, his piece at Real Clear Politics, today's public health emergency, restoring trust with seven steps. You say that we should forbid all drug royalty sharing by employees of FDA, NIH, CDC. Perhaps this is a first time that people are understanding this actually occurs. It seems to be a clear conflict of interest. How did it happen in the first place, and why is it still allowed?
This is a shock, I think, to everyone who, when I speak about this in public, and it was frankly a shock to me, the extent of this, but I have no idea, I don't think most people do, that the drugs FDA, NIH, CDC work on and ultimately approve. Employees of these agencies share drug royalties. I mean, this is such a shocking, overt conflict of interest. This must be forbidden. And Open the Books revealed that in the decade from, say, 2009 to 2020 or 21, royalty payments totaling over $300 million were paid to employees of the NIH. I mean, this is outrageous. We also know that Francis Collins, the NIH's former director, received dozens of payments, as did Anthony Fauci over that decade, this 2010 to 2021. This is a shocking conflict of interest. Hundreds of agency employees get personal profit. Mm-hmm. This must be forbidden. And also, I think there's a second part of this, which is forbidding this sort of open door exchange between private jobs after government service, because this sets off a conflict of interest, which, of course, doesn't mean that everyone is evil doing these things. It's simply that there is, by definition, a lack of objective judgment that is opened up when you have a job waiting for you on the other end.
You say we should require full transparency of FDA, CDC, NIH discussions with immediate posting to public forums. I have heard objections or concerns, I guess I would say, about in situations like this, People are afraid to be free and open. People are afraid to speak their minds because they know that what they say will be made public. Are you concerned about that at all in these discussions inside those organizations?
No, I'm not. I think that's an excuse. The people are supposed to be the boss of the people who work in the FDA, the CDC, the NIH. We need accountability. The biggest problem with corruption is the secrecy, the lack of accountability, the lack of transparency. If they can't say something in public, then they shouldn't be saying it. I don't understand this rationale at all. I have no sympathy for it. When you work for the country, when you give your opinion, you ought to be able to say it in public. The people are in charge, not the advisors.
We'll pause right there. Continue in just a moment with Dr. Scott Atlas as we talk about his recommendations for ways to restore trust in public health officials. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The seasons are changing. Keeping your family healthy is important. So is the health of your car. The longevity and reliability of your vehicle depends on you to make sure your oil, radiator coolant, windshield wipers, and other vital systems have all been taken care of so your car can bring your healthy family through the seasons. Drive into Premier Oil Change today and experience the friendly oil change. Premier doesn't require an appointment, and you don't drop your car off or wait. Maintain your car warranty with our service while you stay in the comfort and safety of your own car. Enjoy a free beverage and Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Stop into a Premier Oil Change near you today. Visit us in Palisadro, in the Holiday Shopping Center, or in Redding, on Lake Boulevard, near Waterworks Park, and Anderson, across from Roundtable Pizza. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Do you or someone you love struggle with PTSD, anxiety, depression, insomnia, OCD, alcoholism, substance abuse disorder, autism, ADHD, brain fog, or traumatic brain injury? At Shasta Meadows Wellness Center, Dr. Taggart and his team offer safe, proven, and effective care, even for those resistant to typical medicine. Learn more about Shasta Meadows Wellness Center. They have IV ketamine or at-home oral ketamine. Ask about the state-of-the-art EEG-guided TMS therapy. This customized, safe, no-side-effect option is effective on a wide range of difficult-to-treat conditions. Visit us today at ShastaMeadowsWellness.com. Don't just get by. Get well.
Call to make an appointment for a free consultation. 530-444-8304. 530-444-8304. Shasta Meadows Wellness Center in Reading.
Attention veterans. Did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website, havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Reading School of the Arts presents Disney's The Little Mermaid Jr. at the historic Cascade Theater, January 18th to 21st. This 60-minute musical is full of the songs you know and love from the animated film and the Broadway production. This production by Reading School of the Arts is the only of its kind. Students at the heart of the show, come support students in the arts and prepare to be interchanged with guilds.
Tickets available now at CascadeTheater.org. That's Cascade, T-H-E-A-T-R-E.org. This production of The Little Mermaid Jr. is presented with special permission by Music Theater International.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Dr. Scott Atlas, co-director of the Global Liberty Initiative and a fellow at Hillsdale College's Academy for Science and Freedom, about his recommendations for ways to restore trust in public health officials. Dr. Atlas, you say a restatement with an executive order that the CDC and other health organizations are strictly advisory and don't have the power to set laws or mandates, which is true, in which we knew, but during COVID especially, it seemed like many executives in positions were more than willing to pass the buck and simply say, this is what the CDC says, this is what we're going to do. What would restating this, what effect would that have?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's true that this isn't creating a new rule. It's simply stating something publicly that should be emphasized both to the public and to the officials, the people in power, because from the president on down, the governors, the public health officials, most of university presidents, et cetera, most of these people said, oh, the CDC says this, therefore we are doing that, as if they're not responsible, the individuals making that statement. The people that are in positions of power, if they can't handle the positions of power and the responsibility of that position, they should resign, frankly. And so we need that pretense that somehow the CDC is in charge to be eliminated, because these people hide behind the CDC and other agencies instead of taking responsibility. And I think restating this very clearly to the public sort of eliminates the illusion that the CDC is the rule setter. I think people, regular people, many of them, I would guess, believe that the CDC literally set the rules and the people in charge were simply following the rules. They had no choice. And that's simply false.
Decentralize today's cartel of NIH funding that controls all academic science careers and university medical centers. Now, people who are not in medicine or in the health profession might not understand how this works. Walk us through a bit where that funding comes from and how it affects or influences perhaps those who want to have a career in science or research.
This is very important for the public to understand. Scientific research, all scientific research, is essentially controlled by a small group of people. Why do I say that? Well, first of all, most university medical centers, they can't exist without NIH. They depend on NIH money. Mm-hmm. More than 15 U.S. university medical centers receive over $500 million each every single year in funding from the NIH. They therefore have, again, the conflict of interest. They're going to be very reluctant to speak up against the NIH. Secondly, all academic scientists, and therefore all science research, really in the United States, is controlled by NIH funding. Every career of every assistant professor to get promotion, you must get an NIH grant and to continue to be promoted, to maintain your position. So what happens is that because you're dependent on the NIH grant, you're not, first of all, you're not willing to speak up against the NIH, but more, even more importantly, you're there doing research that you know has a greater likelihood of getting funding. Mm-hmm. The NIH funding is not just the dollar amount. They also put out a list of what they're going to fund, what type of project. So they're heavily influencing what kind of research is done. It does not allow for independent science. And this is really a small group of people, what I call a cartel, because this small group of people at the top signing off on the funding are the same people who control the scientific publications, because they're the editors of the scientific journals. They're the same people who are the heads of the departments and the universities. It's a very sort of a very small network of people that control all the careers, all of the research, and this is very destructive. We need to decentralize the funding. We need to split up the authority. We can't have a tiny group of individuals control all research. We saw what was happening during COVID, where they didn't just not fund research that could have led to earlier drug therapy with already approved drugs. They also blocked publications. They preferentially published things that supported their narrative. That's not how science is done. That's, in fact, antithetical to science.
Dr. Scott Atlas with us. Today's Public Health Emergency, Restoring Trust with Seven Steps. You can find us at Real Clear Policy. The seventh step, immediately halt all binding agreements or pledges to the World Health Organization. Now, a lot of this has to do with instilling confidence in Americans in what's happening in our country with health organizations. But the World Health Organization is one that had its reputation left in tatters in the wake of COVID. Does the WHO have any hope of being an organization that can serve the public health anywhere moving forward?
Well, I think it's very important that we have the WHO in a very high quality functional state. It's helpful to the world. First of all, there are global health issues. We, as a rich nation, have an interest in helping other countries. We also have the WHO functioning as a data repository, as issuing guidelines, as helping in health disasters, and particularly in poor countries. So it has a potential for doing very, very positive things for not just the U.S., but the world. And I think we're all for that in the theoretical sense. The problem is that the WHO's record is abysmal. Mm-hmm. In the last several pandemics, it was either late or completely wrong about everything it did. It exhibited gross incompetence under the director, Tedros. And Tedros himself really did some very bad things, including backing China's reckless human rights violations with their severe lockdowns, praising them as saying they should be congratulated for their extraordinary measures as people were killing themselves and literally imprisoned in China during COVID. The WHO disregarded the evidence and published strange and changing narratives on mitigation measures. They censored their own employees for talking about the biological fact of the limited amount of spread from asymptomatic people. They changed definitions of scientific terms. What's frightening to people that they should be aware of is that the Biden administration's ambassador to the WHO, her name is Hamamoto, she's already stated, quote, the U.S. is committed to the WHO's pandemic accord. Hmm. The WHO's pandemic accord is not even finally written, first of all, so that's a very strange statement to make for someone who's supposed to be representative of the United States government. Secondly, that pandemic accord is going to be legally binding, and it does things like defines public health emergency for other countries. It has the authority in the draft form to declare that there's a public health emergency in your country. I frankly am stunned that any sovereign nation would allow a third party to legally define and impose restrictions on a country for a public health emergency. But this is not acceptable. This should not be acceptable to any United States president. It should not be acceptable to any free country. We need to rein in what's going on and take a very good look at the activities and at the potential corruption.
Dr. Scott Atlas, you can read his piece at Real Clear Politics, today's Public Health Emergency, Restoring Trust with Seven Steps. He is a fellow at Hillsdale's Academy for Science and Freedom, the Robert Wesson Senior Fellow in Healthcare Policy at the Hoover Institution at Stanford, and co-director of the Global Liberty Institute. Dr. Atlas, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Up next, we conclude our series with Dr. Christopher Bush from Hillsdale's English Department, taking a look at some of the most prominent works of Robert Frost. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Umpqua Bank presents Predator vs. Prey Indoor Animal Show at Turtle Bay Exploration Park, featuring live animals showcasing their natural survival techniques used for hunting, foraging, adapting, and surviving in the wild. This educational animal show features mammals, reptiles, and free-flying birds. Saturdays from 2 to 2:30 inside the Mill Building at Turtle Bay. Included with paid admission, free for members. Great for animal enthusiasts of all ages. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall winter. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already, we are experiencing record high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high price winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right, even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up, fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to find us on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. You can find this show and many others at podcast.hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Christopher Bush, Professor of English at Hillsdale College. Dr. Bush, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here, Scott.
Continuing and finishing our brief series on the life, themes, and the work of Robert Frost, this conversation, we'll talk about some of his specific works and dig a bit deeper in there. I want to open it up. Where should we start with Robert Frost? Where do you start with your students?
Well, Scott, I often start with The Road Not Taken from his third book, Mountain Interval, that we've talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always spend a lot of time on Birches as well. Probably to begin with his first book, A Boy's Will, which is filled with lyric poetry. He has a beautiful poem called Mowing. And what's interesting is that he learned how to mow hay using a scythe. And so, in fact, he undoubtedly used some of that that experience in writing the poem Mowing. Mm-hmm. The poet Seamus Heaney in a video program kind of goes through this poem Mowing and really talks about it is a good example of the sound of sense of what Frost is trying to do with his language. And he says, you know, it's not just a kind of a simple, like, mechanical imitation of mowing, but really the sound of the poem, in fact, somehow reflects the activity. And I think also in this poem, what's interesting is that it's about labor. It's about a simple act of labor connected with a seasonal connection to the land. And so the poem, what he's done is he's created art, really. He's created beauty out of the common life, out of common work. And that really is a kind of a theme that we'll see through much of his poetry. If we go on to his second book, To North of Boston, for example, he has the poem Mending Wall, which again is a poem that refers to the seasons, the seasonal meeting of the neighbors to put the wall back together. The wall, the stone wall, has kind of fallen down or been taken apart. And his neighbor says, you know, well, good fences make good neighbors. So we better build this wall, put this wall back together. And again, he uses that activity as a kind of a springboard to asking the question, well, why do they make good neighbors? What is the purpose of a wall? He says, before I built a wall, I'd want to ask, you know, what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offense, which is a great play on words there at the end as well. But what's so interesting about that poem, about mending wall, in addition to the fact that it has, you know, it's a springtime poem, it's a poem about neighbors meeting, very much rooted in common life, in common land. But what's really interesting about it is that we see in about line 11 or 12, something like that, that he says, I let my neighbor know beyond the hill. And what's remarkable about it is if our speaker is so opposed to wall building as he seems to be, why does he initiate that? And it's just a very interesting question. And so I think that, again, is a very powerful poem. Mending Wall is one that listeners might be familiar with. We talked a little bit about The Road Not Taken from his third book. But if we go down to the fourth book, New Hampshire, which I think was his first Pulitzer Prize from New Hampshire, he has some very, very interesting poems in there. There's one called A Star in a Stone Boat, which is an interesting poem because Frost had sold subscriptions, I think it was to the Youth's Companion, and he used that money to buy a telescope. Well, a stone boat was basically a kind of a sled that was dragged behind horses, and every year the farmers would go over their fields and they would pick up the stones that had come up from the frost and during the winter and put them on the stone boat. Well, one time, apparently, you know, in the poem, they come upon a small fragment, I guess, of a meteor. So it's a star in a stone boat, which is kind of a wonderful thing of, you know, linking that activity of you know, digging in the earth or being in the earth with the stars. He has a poem called Nothing Gold Can Stay, and talks about the coming of spring and how the first green of nature, you know, the first sprouting of nature, is something that doesn't last. And I think he uses that, again, that nature as a springboard. Nothing gold can stay. There's a sense that, you know, the best things in life often kind of are there, and then they're fleeting. They kind of evaporate. And
Frost's poem, The Gift Outright, described as a history of the United States by Frost himself, recited at the inauguration of John F. Kennedy in 1961. Is it, in fact, a celebration of our country?
Well, the history of that poem is interesting. Frost did not intend to recite that poem at the inauguration. He had written another poem for the purpose. And then, you know, he was an old man. It was a very, very bright, sunny day in Washington. And he just really wasn't able to read the poem that he had prepared. And so he decided to recite from memory The Gift Outright. And I think it's a celebration, I think, of America. I think it's a celebration of America as a gift to Americans who were at first maybe a little bit hesitant to accept it. And, you know, he says, the land was ours before we were the lands. And he goes kind of back and forth about this idea of, accepting that. And so he says, something we were withholding made us weak until we found out, you know, it was ourselves we were withholding from our land of living and forthwith found salvation in surrender. And so I think it was finally that we were able to, quote, surrender to the land, and allow the land to fill us, and such as she was, he says at the end, such as she would become. I think that's a very, very powerful affirmation. It's a reading of history, a reading of our national history that is really quite a tender reading, I think, of our history.
Talking Robert Frost with Christopher Bush, Dr. Bush, professor of English at Hillsdale College. Frost called Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening, one of his better-known works, his best bid for remembrance. Do you think he was accurate in that assessment, and was he successful in that mission?
Well, I think he was successful, certainly, I think, because it's probably the poem that many can remember from elementary school and maybe recite, you know, from memory even. It's interesting that I guess myself that it's his greatest achievement. It's a beautiful poem. It's a short poem, but I think there are others that I would remember if I had to say, oh, I'm only allowed to remember three. Probably there would be some others that I might want to put up there.
What about your students when you teach Frost? Are there any particular works that they very much connect to, or tend to have the greatest insights into? Which Frost poems really work with your students?
And we all appreciate that Frost is very accessible, that we can understand him and that his language. And they're always delighted because when we get to talk about it, to see, oh, there's another level, there's another kind of something, he's doing something else and wanting us to hang on as he whips us around the, you know, with his ideas. But what I try to do often is I will try to, you know, have us read poems that might have some special interest. And there's one poem, it's a longer poem, it's called West Running Brook and comes from a book he published by that title of that, that's the title poem, 1928. It's called West Running Brook. And it's a beautiful, beautiful poem. It's a conversational narrative between two people who are recently married, and they're having a conversation about the brook. And of course we're in New England, and it's odd that a brook would be running west, because brooks all run toward the sea except for this particular one.
Dr. Christopher Bush, professor of English at Hillsdale College, as we complete our series on the biography, the style and themes and the works of Robert Frost. Dr. Bush, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Up next, we talk with Joseph Sella, a Hillsdale graduate, also a former ambassador in the Trump administration, and a longtime political consultant. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall winter. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already, we are experiencing record-high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high-priced winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue open and free every other Sunday right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
Hi, this is Elle. Join me and my good friends and co-hosts Ron Lim and Lenny Matthews for our show, Ask Elle, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Every Tuesday night at 6 p.m., we'll be exploring powerful topics on how to have a successful and satisfying relationship. See you here on Tuesday night at 6 p.m., brought to you by KNS Staffing Solutions.
530-605-4517.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. Be sure to follow us on X, formerly Twitter. We're at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined by Joseph Sella. He's a 1991 graduate of Hillsdale College, back on campus to accept an alumni award, Outstanding Professional Achievement in American Diplomacy. He served as ambassador to Fiji, Kiribati, Nauru, Tonga, and Tuvalu from 2019 through 2021. Also founder of the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast, member of the Trump Transition Team, founder principal at Potifex Group. We'll see how much of this we can ask about in the next 10, 15 minutes or so. Joseph, thanks so much for joining us.
Honored to be here with Scott.
This job, this ambassadorship for these countries. For a couple of years during the Trump administration, I have to ask something very simple. What does an ambassador do? What are the duties of an ambassador, of a diplomat? What are you expected to do in that role?
Well, your principal role, Scott, is to discharge the foreign policy of the administration you're serving in, whether you are a non-career ambassador such as myself or a career foreign service officer serving as an ambassador, where you are given taskings specifically from the president through the secretary of state. You read them, and it varies from region to region. My AOR, or area of responsibility, was under the umbrella of East Asia and Pacific, mm-hmm. And that has its own set of constituencies and geopolitical dynamics that that were outlined in that charge that I had to keep. So, and it is really up to the chief of mission, the ambassador, as to how to execute it. You're turned to for your background, your principles, your work ethic, your experience to execute what you've been given. And set about doing so with great vigor with my beautiful wife and our dear seven children and a great team we had at the embassy.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the first time you've lived overseas, but what is that like for you personally, and then your family of seven kids, your wife living somewhere that's not here in the United States?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it was our first time overseas, and I have to tell you, the first our departure day was a bit of a scene out of a Chris Farley movie. We were the last ones on the plane. We were probably an hour and a half too late to the airport, my fault, and it probably is the first time that all people sitting in business class shared it with seven children under 14 and under and their parents. And that's a custom when you first go out to post, and when you return, you fly business class all the way. So, but that was a unique experience. Was the beginning of a beautiful entree of serving our country and representing our principles in many, many unique ways.
talking with Joseph Sella, class of 1991 here at Hillsdale, back on campus to receive an alumni award for professional achievement in American diplomacy. You've done other things, too, including being one of the founders of the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast around 20 years ago or so. This is separate from the National Prayer Breakfast. So why was something else needed, and why did you create it?
Yeah, I draw much inspiration from our evangelical brothers and sisters in many ways. And one of the things that that they launched during the Eisenhower administration was the National Prayer Breakfast. And it's prospered since, and in the last couple of years, there's had some been some challenges. In 2003, I happened to be reading some writings of the late Pope John Paul about the new evangelization. It was a charge where he articulated how we all have an obligation to preach the gospel in ways that are new in methods, ardor, and expression. And I happened to be watching President Bush at the National Prayer Breakfast, and I thought, okay, boy, what a great way to plant the flag on behalf of the Catholic Church. All are welcome to come, and all have been over the years, and it's been a great blessing. And we've had, you know, anywhere from 900 to 3,000 people since 2004. President Bush has attended all four of the last 4 years of administration. We've had some Supreme Court justices and other distinguished leaders, but it's been a great joy and borne great fruit.
Joseph Sella has also been involved as an advisor, consultant on any number of campaigns across the country as part of his role as founder and principal of the Pontifex Group. How do you run a campaign differently today than perhaps 10 years ago, 15 years ago? It feels like politics has changed drastically over that course of time.
That is one of the finest questions I've had in that regard. And my first campaign, Scott, was in 1985. My father ran for my hometown city council, the city of Richmond in Macomb County, Michigan. And we were his campaign team. It involved a simple going door-to-door for him, to every house in our city with a flyer. And I remember these little sticky letters that my mom used to, it was like a get out the vote campaign flyer, primitive, but he got it and served several terms on city council. So that was my first entree, but it certainly went from very conventional print, phone banking, mailing, and some radio and TV, depending on the level of the campaign. But certainly when the digital revolution hit, I would say in 1995, things really began to accelerate and morph. Social media was born, and it took on, again, the pace increased. I think the costs in some respects were bled out, but in other ways they've increased.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've said, reflecting in the past, how there was always the 24-hour news cycle when CNN was born in the early 90s. But now, and this is affecting our culture, I think. Yeah. I think if you consider social media, I think we have a 0.24-second news cycle now. And you have citizen journalists. Shining a light on some not-so-objective reporting and some agenda-driven reporting. So it's been a blessing, but it does cut both ways. But it certainly has impacted the, I'd say, the volatility of campaigns.
You have this amazing opportunity to go from Hillsdale College, being a student and a graduate, and all that the college stands for and teaches and values, to a position in your life where you are literally representing the country as a diplomat for a presidential administration. I doubt you saw that in your future when you were here on campus. Where did you see yourself?
Since I was 6 years old, knew that I was drawn to, in a very simple way early on, to the realm of political things, government, and public policy. I found it on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. My dad had it. I read the news and views section,
mm-hmm.
and improved my reading skills, would always watch the morning news, would read the Detroit News and Free Press after I got home in the afternoon, and then would watch the evening news on all networks as I was able. So that was certainly formative, but you never know when a call in life happens from God, and I've been blessed in a number of instances throughout my life to know with great alacrity when something is meant to be, ranging from marrying my wife and and the various doors that have opened, in which I've served the various capacities. Call it destiny, you can call it providence, but knew that it was meant to happen. And, my latest, tour of duty was an example of that. I was, one quick story I'll share with you was an election night. It was, wee hours of the morning in New York City, and, was asked, could I go into the West Wing? You know, in a leadership capacity and in one of the divisions. And I said, you know, I wanted him to win. The alternative was just not an option for me for a variety of reasons. And I said, I just want to go back to life on a dirt road and my consulting work and live life with my wife and kids. And, wasn't really looking for a job, wanted to just win. And, that happened. And they said, well, be ready, because the next words out of this person's mouth was, be ready, you're probably going to be offered an ambassadorship. Again, never crossed my mind. But I thought, okay, I digested it, and I thought, okay, that is probably something I could do. It would be a high honor. Grandpa and Dad served in World War One and Korea after being drafted on the stateside. But really a high honor to serve under our flag, advance it in the principles of our country, and put the best face forward that we have with my wife and kids to our brothers and sisters abroad.
Joseph Sella, a 1991 graduate of Hillsdale College, back on campus to receive an award. Outstanding professional achievement in American diplomacy. He was ambassador to Fiji, Kiribati, Nauru, Tonga, and Tuvalu from 2019 through 2021. And back here, Joseph, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Honored to be here. Thank you, Scott, for the opportunity.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Scott Atlas, also Christopher Bush from Hillsdale's English Department, and Joseph Sella, former ambassador and Hillsdale graduate. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. The assistant producer of the program is Sam Lair. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Ago, Simpson University arrived in Redding with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Redding's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing up this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Casa, 1910. If you've been curious, perhaps even tempted, to try a Mexican puro, this is the stick to get. An absolute pleasure to smoke, and honestly, one of my all-time top tens. The Casa 1910. Get yours today. Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Good morning, Redding. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.